Welcome, everyone. We call to order the committee, and the first bills we have up are Senate Bill, we're going to hold together Senate Bill 4440 and Senate Bill. Oops, I'm sorry, before I get into that, we have possible introduction of committee measures. And Richard, do we have any?
Yeah, we have five today. We have LC Draft 3154 dated 1/16/2011. We have LC Draft 3514 dated 1/24/2011. We have LC Draft 3266 dated 2/2/2011. We have LC Draft 3700 dated 2/8/2011. And we have LC Draft 1497 dated 9/27/2010.
And for the benefit of the audience, for those who aren't used to this process, it's considered a courtesy for committees to introduce bills for committees, so it's not a commitment. If we introduce it, it's not a commitment that anybody's going to vote for or against a bill. It's just to get it into the process. So with that, the chair would move introduction of the six bills.
Five
bills as presented. Is there any objection to the introduction? Seeing none, the bills are introduced, and we will now move on to opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 441 and Senate Bill 511. We'll do that. And Richard.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to start with Senate Bill 511. Senate Bill 511 expands the exemption of homemade beer, wine, and fermented fruit juice from the state's Liquor Control Act.
Yeah.
It allows making, keeping, and transportation of homemade beer, wine, or fermented fruit juice. It allows the possession of mash, wort, and wash for the purpose of making homemade beer, wine, and fermented fruit juice. It allows the consumption of homemade beer, wine, and fermented fruit juice at private residence, competitions, and exhibitions. It defines homemade as being made at a private residence for a non-commercial purpose by a person living at the residence. It defines non-commercial as being not dependent or conditioned on financial consideration. It exempts prizes and awards from competitions and exhibitions from being considered financial consideration, and it allows a person to provide assistance to another person in making homemade beer, wine, or fermented fruit juice. Senate Bill 4400 is similar to 511, so I don't want to go through everything that's similar, but I do want to highlight some of the changes. Senate Bill 444 exempts prizes and awards at competition and exceptions, similar to 511, but it also exempts tax deductions or credits for donating homemade wine, beer, or fermented fruit juice to nonprofits. It exempts event admission charges or club organizational dues. It exempts homemade beer, wine, or fermented fruit juice made by other persons, and it exempts beer, wine, or fermented fruit juice ingredients. Some other differences, Senate Bill 444 specifically allows unlicensed malt beverages and homemade beer, wine, or fermented fruit juices to be stored at licensed premises, and Senate Bill 444 requires that licensees not acquire any ownership interest in unlicensed malt beverages, homemade beer, wine, and fermented fruit juice stored at the licensed premises. There is also a Dash 1 amendment, which I have in your packet today that I handed out. This amendment removes the language to Senate Bill 444 requiring that homemade beer, wine, and fermented fruit juice be made at a private residence by the person living at the residence. It adds relevant events to the list of events where homemade beer and wine and fermented fruit juice are allowed, and it removes language that restricts the consumption of malt beverages on licensed premises. Senate Bill 511, 444, and the Dash 1 amendments all have minimal revenue impact and minimal expenditure impacts, and there was quite a bit of testimony submitted electronically, so I included those in your packet, which I distributed beforehand, and those are all entered into the record.
So we will start. It's our honor to have the good Representative Schaffler here today. So
thank you,
Representative, would you like to start?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, because I have to be rude and run out. I have to run out. The other thing we all knew. Anyway, I'm Mike Schaffler, State Rep, House District 48, Happy Valley, out of Southeast Portland. I'm just here on Senate Bill 444 today. You know, homebrew is a big, long tradition in Oregon. It has been for Well, since Oregon was established, I've actually read several books about the history of making beer in Oregon, and I enjoy a cold one on occasion. And I think because of an interpretation of the law, a lot of good things have been shut down, and we want to allow people to go out there and continue to not just participate in these events, but as we all know, the homebrew industry is flourishing in Oregon. That's a great thing. The entrepreneurialism, people coming out, starting small and getting big and hiring more people and dragging us out of this problem we're in, we want to certainly continue to encourage that. I do have a friendly amendment that would establish a true pint. I hope you'll entertain that.
Not really.
If you have any questions of me, I'll try and answer them to the best of my ability. Otherwise, I have to run a gilk. So.
Thank you. Does anybody have a question?
Mr. Chair, I've sometimes asked people why they have sponsored a bill, but in this case, I'm looking at the sponsors, and I do not see your name.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator. I am on it. It just hasn't been printed yet. There's a new edition coming out.
That's a true relief.
And, you know, I don't know how many years ago it was, but Henry Weinert, when he had a brewery up in Oregon, wanted to put a pipe down to the Skidmore area there where there's a fountain, and just let beer run. And people say that the temperance outfit didn't want him to do that because they thought kids might get a hold of it. But really, it's because he couldn't get a permit for a linear project.
Anyway, thank you, Representative.
I'm with him on that particular one, but that's not what I suppose. I am Senator Brian Boquist. I represent Senate District 12, which is portions of six rural counties, and because what I'm about to say, I'll just leave it at that. That way the OLCC can look around. About 6 months ago, I had some homebrewers come to me before it managed to make the front page of the Oregonian and so on and so forth and say, we have this issue and a problem. Can you help it with us? But we don't want our name on it because we're afraid of retribution. And so we drafted this, sent it downstairs. And, of course, being as smart, you know, because I'm an astute Republican. I looked around last session and said the only tax that never really had any legs was the beer tax because no Democrat or Republican was going to vote for it to drink beer. So I said, all right, there's got to be other people that want to do this. So I said, okay, check the block. This is not confidential. We'll sign on. And, of course, in true typical fashion, after the fact, we realized LC had drafted two bills. And so I'll kind of leave it at that right there. Senator Prozanski's got amendments for his bill. Mine is incorporated into Senator Prozanski's bill. I'm on Senator Prozanski's bill, Senator Burdick, because, yes, I do drink homebrew. And so I am game with whatever the committee wants to do. I do think that the bill and the amendments and the progress were down here. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague and fellow beer drinker, Democrat, Senator Prozanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Floyd Prozanski, State Senator from District 4, parts of Lane and Douglas counties. First of all, I want to thank you for taking the Senate Bill 444 up as quickly as you are. We are kind of not under a time pressure, but we are under a time pressure to try to make certain we can return what was missed by many county fairs this last year and the state fair, and that is the homebrew competition. The problem arose when there was an inquiry made through OLCC as to whether or not the homebrew competition was appropriate to be handled at these different fairs. The interpretation came back that based on the strict writing of the statute, not only was it not appropriate, you could not even transport homebrew out of the residence. And so the definition, as you've heard from your committee administrator, and interpretation is basically where it has to be done in a private residence and it cannot be consumed or moved outside of that private residence. I think most of us probably had someone in our district contact us regarding this, let's say, interpretation, as it would pertain to not only home brew, but also to home winemaking as well. And so what we have before you is Senate Bill 444. It does, in fact, take care of this issue. It has been some mention has been said as to my participation in drinking. Not only do I drink home brew, I actually make home brew. And so I want to go on the record as to any potential conflict that I've been making homebrew in this state for 23 years. And co-chief sponsors actually Representative Shuffler. When he and I talked about this in the summer, we had agreed that I would take the lead and work with the various homebrewers around the state, get all their input, and put the bill together. Because of the time frame we had to get the bill filed for pre-session filing, that's why Senator Burdick, there's why Representative Shuffler's name was not on the bill. We do have approximately 54 sponsors between members of the House and the Senate. I believe we have the majority, both the House and Senate members supporting Senate Bill 444. There is no opposition to the bill. I've worked with OLCC. The Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors also are supportive of the bill. I did tell OLCC we will watch to make certain there are no unintended consequences, and if they are, we will come back and take care of any problems. I will say that over the past 20-plus years, where homebrewing has become much more of a highlighted hobby in the state of Oregon, we have not seen any problems, and that is one of the reasons I believe OLCC has been supportive, but they also want to make certain we don't see any misuse of the legislation. Now, the legislation itself is here to allow for these type of competitions to occur, making certain transportation can occur. What we are going to continue to see limitations on is anything that would be perceived to allow for any violations of any other alcohol regulations as would pertain to beer, whether it's homebrew or if it's commercial beer. There is not going to be any commercial benefit from this. This is the changes in the Dash 1s. When you look at the Dash 1s, what we have done is we basically have stated that homebrew is made for non-commercial purposes. Very simple, very short, and very sweet. And if anyone is attempting to profit from homebrew, they will fall under the same regulations as anyone that's in the business needing a license. And if not, I expect them to be cited and to be held accountable for that conduct. We have a number of witnesses that you'll hear from today. Some of these individuals represent the various homebrewing associations and guilds that are in the state. And there's also, as Representative Shuffler said, many of our craft brewers of today, the McMenamins, the Widmers, all of those individuals started off homebrewing. And you look at the magnitude of what has happened and their capacity and what they have done and generated for the state in employment and the opportunity and making Oregon a destination for people to come and see parts of the state and enjoy the craft beers that we do have. There's other ones that are up and coming, one that's out of the Eugene area, actually two that are production breweries, Oakshire and Nicosi. Both of those breweries are up and running, and they are moving through the charts as to the production. And I know this is happening around the state. So this is another way that we can actually help the economy and make certain clarity for these individuals that can, in fact, make homebrew. I'll leave you with one other story to show that another success of a homebrewer. An individual who was part of the, I believe it's the Cascade Brewers Association, which is out of Eugene, came up with a beer that was a hazelnut brown ale that was so tasty that when someone from Rogue actually had a sample of it, they said, "We would like to buy your recipe." And so that is another success story of someone that was actually craft brewing, that sold the recipe, and now it's being exported internationally. So with that, I would love to be able to say I'd share with you now a homebrew, but because of the current state of the law, we cannot transport the beer to you. So after we do so, maybe we can all tip one for the industry as well as for the homebrewer hobbyist in the future of Oregon. Thank you very much. Any questions that the committee has? Senator Boquist and I will attempt to answer those.
Senator, any questions of the witnesses? You got off easy. Thank you.
I would just add, Mr. Chair, I know there's an exemption for legislators. Obviously, he doesn't know that.
Well, we have a number of people who wish to testify, and we have a practice of asking those who live 100 miles from the Capitol to testify first. So I have one person who meets that qualification. It's Gary Glass. So come on down.
Thank you.
And I would note that we have four other bills on our schedule today, and in the old legislative rules, I think this bill is heading for a yes, so don't talk it into a no as we go through this.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Gary Glass. I'm the director of the American Home Brewers Association. We're based in Boulder, Colorado. We are a not-for-profit trade association. We have 24,000 members, and 550 of those members are here in Oregon, and so I'm here to represent those members. I am testifying on behalf of Senate Bill 444, including Senator Brzezinski's proposed amendments, the AHA and the Oregon Homebrewers Alliance both believe that Senate Bill 444 is the only proposed homebrew bill that will restore to homebrewers the right to practice all of the legitimate activities that they participated in prior to 2010. Currently, there are about 750,000 homebrewers in the United States. At least 17,000 of those live right here in Oregon. It's a growing hobby. We conducted a survey of homebrew supply shops last year and found that in 2009, homebrew supply shops grew in revenue by 16% on average. So that's substantial growth in the midst of a recession, but it's also growth that might not be reflected in Oregon under the status quo. So I certainly urge you to pass this bill, and we can see that kind of growth here in Oregon as well as the rest of the country. Homebrewers are very interested in improving their brewing skills. They're passionate about beer and brewing, and two of the ways that they can improve upon their brewing is through competitions and through homebrew club meetings. They get feedback on their beers either through the judges and competitions or via their peers in club meetings. And right now, neither of those things can take place because they can't transport their homebrew. Senate Bill 444 corrects that, and so it would allow for competitions as well as club meetings. In terms of competitions across the country, there are 200 in 2010. The American Home Brewers Association, the Beer Judge Certification Program, sanctioned 313 competitions across the United States with over 70,000 entries submitted in 2010. So this is, you know, widespread practice in the United States. The judges that are reviewing those beers in competition, they have to go through a very rigorous exam to be certified by the Beer Judge Certification Program. It's a 3-hour essay exam that takes about 3 months to study for. It's brutal. I'm not looking forward to ever taking it again. Those competitions allow substantial feedback from the judges to the entrants so they can improve upon their beers. I believe the OHBA submitted a copy of the BJCP score sheet so you can get an idea of what kind of input that the homebrewers are getting from those competitions. There are over 1,000 homebrew clubs across the country, including 23 here in Oregon. The American Home Brewers Association hosts a competition called the National Homebrew Competition. It's actually the world's largest beer competition. Last year we had a record 6,287 entries submitted to this competition. And it's done through 10 regional sites. And this year we were planning on having one of those regional sites here in Oregon, but because of the interpretation of the law that took place last year, we had to withdraw that and move it to Seattle. And with this competition, not only does that mean that it puts the Oregon homebrewers obviously at a disadvantage that they can't enter the competition, but also means that all the judges that would have been coming from out of state to judge in the competition aren't spending money on hotel rooms and in restaurants in Oregon. They're going to be spending their money in Seattle this year. The AHA also hosts the National Homebrewers Conference. This year we're expecting a record attendance of 1,700 attendees. That event is going to produce a revenue of $500,000 for our host hotel. And in addition to that, the host city is going to see revenue from the attendees going to overflow hotels, going to restaurants, through airfare, et cetera. But under the current law, we could not have that conference here in Oregon. And while Oregon happens to be one of the best beer destination states in the country, unless the law has changed, we can't have the conference hosted here. But SB 444 would make the changes that are necessary for us to bring the conference to Oregon. Homebrewers are also big-time supporters of small businesses, especially homebrew supply retailers. There are 17 retail shops in the state of Oregon. In addition to that, there's also one of the three major wholesalers for the homebrew supply shops in the nation is based in Portland, Oregon. Right now, typically in most other states, homebrew supply shops can host club meetings where homebrews are tasted and evaluated. They can serve as drop-off locations or judging sites for homebrew competitions. They can host homebrew demonstrations so they can introduce new customers to the hobby, or they can offer samples of some of the maybe a homebrew kit so that a customer can get an idea of what they could be doing if they were in the hobby. But under the current situation, they would not be able to do any of those things. But SB 444 would correct all of those and allow the shops to be marketing themselves in an effective manner. Certainly, homebrewers are the biggest supporters of their local breweries. There are over 70 breweries in the state of Oregon. And Oregon tops the nation in terms of per capita consumption of craft beer, so small breweries. And that's a direct reflection on, I'd say, the homebrewing community here that's really promoted those small breweries. And they also provide a pool of potential employees through the education. Again, as amateur brewers, they can become professional brewers. Or 90% of commercial brewers got their start as homebrewers. And they're also the ones that are most likely to be opening new breweries. And then, of course, Oregon is a big supplier of hops for the nation. And, you know, homebrewers are not only consuming hops, but they're also consuming the beers that contain the most hops, and they're opening the breweries that are going to be, in the future, buying those hops. So, in conclusion, I would strongly urge you to pass Senate Bill 444. Not only is it the right thing to do for Oregon's homebrewers, but it's the right thing to do for Oregon's business community. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Glass? Thank you very much. I'm now going to move back up to the take them in the order that people signed up. And first I have Cheryl Lentz and Jack Lentz.
Lentz. Just like L-Y-N-C-H, only it's spelled different.
Lentz.
Lentz.
Lentz. Okay, I'm not saying
that.
I apologize.
L-Y-N-C-H. Well, anyway, we have a small...
Could you introduce yourself for the record?
Oh, sure. I'm Cheryl Lentz, and I live in Polk County. We have a small quarter-acre vineyard. We grow our own grapes and make our own wine. We get about 50 gallons per year, Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. We also make blackberry wine from wild blackberries. We don't sell our wine. We share it with our family and friends. 5 years ago, we were able to provide our wine for our daughter's wedding. It was served under OLCC regulations. Under the standards now, we would not be able to have this privilege. We buy our supplies from local merchants, and we support the wine industry of our state. We participate in events at the Shemeketa Viticulture Center and the State Fair. The wine masters at Willamette Valley Vineyards and Eola Hills and others have been our mentors for our winemaking. Our wine industry in Oregon is pertinent to agriculture in our state. Almost all commercial winemakers started with home winemaking. Also, home winemakers promote wine interest. Don't close us down. I fully support both bills. Oh, any questions? It's good wine, too, that we make.
Did you introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Jack Lynch from Polk County, also Cheryl's husband. And I'm the winemaker in the family, and Cheryl's the bottle washer and the
helper.
Except the only thing I have to add to what she said we do is we'll frequently have group projects where several of us will get together, pick grapes from a vineyard, and then go together to make it. Under the current law, we were not allowed to transport it from the place we made it, nor to take it to another house besides the one it was made at. So the current law prohibited a lot of things we've been doing. It'd be nice to be living within the law.
Thank you. Any questions?
Go ahead.
Would there be points that'd do, like he says, don't overdo it?
The main thing is the state fair contest. That is an extremely worthwhile endeavor. And because they have professional judges that tell us what we're doing wrong, and so you can actually improve your home wine by listening to them. And it's a very low, you know, it's $10. We pay the cost of it, and it's very useful information.
Right. We also critique each other's wine and have different meetings, and it would really inhibit us.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Mr. Silcott? Well, maybe it wasn't Mr. Brian?
Is
that? Yeah, good.
Chair Byer, members of the committee, my name is Brian Silcott. I am with the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, and I am the director of the Oregon Exposition Center and State Fair. I'm going to keep it very brief.
Thank you.
A particular part of this is of interest to me is the competitions. The State Fair has been having an amateur wine competition for 31 years, an amateur beer competition for 22 years, and we did not hold it last year when we discovered that what we were doing was outside of the law. We feel these competitions are not only fun, they encourage home winemaking and beer making, and they give the opportunity for the people that participate in these crafts to refine their craft, to judge themselves against each other. The spirit of competition is what drives success in many cases, and we think our competition contributes to that and is part of a spectacular event that we put on every year.
Okay. Questions? Thank you very much. John McCauley and, let's see, Chris Clement. Apologize if I mispronounce your name. John, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John McCauley. I'm representing the Oregon Fairs Association. We are here to strongly support the legislation for all of the reasons you've heard. These competitions are very important. This is a big deal for county fairs. The Washington County Fair, for example, had the last time they had a competition, 300 entries in homemade beer and homemade wine. Jackson County conducts their home brewing and home winemaking competition as part of a harvest fair and has almost 300 entries. So this is really important. We like both bills. Senate Bill 444 seems to be the one that has traction here, so we definitely support that. And I would echo Senator Przanski's admonition to pass this as quickly as possible. Our fairs will begin putting together their premium books, all of their entry information, probably around April 1st. So we are hoping that this bill can be on the governor's desk by then so we can include these competitions in this summer's fairs. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Any questions, John?
Sir. Chair Byer, members of the committee. Oh, I'm Chris Hummert. I'm here representing the Oregon Homebrewers Alliance and the Oregon Brew Crew, one of the oldest and largest homebrewing clubs here in the state. We have about 215 members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. First, I'd like to bring your attention to the testimony that I've submitted electronically, which includes letters from homebrewers, homebrew clubs, and industry professionals. I've also provided paper copies of my testimony, along with Denny Kahn, who will be speaking later, and Gary Glass, from that you just heard from. In addition, I've included letters of support from Brian Buchanan at the Oregon Brewers Guild, Gary Fish from Deschutes Brewing, Jamie Floyd from Nekasi Brewing, and Tim Sobel from Brewers Union Local 180. The state's done a great disservice with the community with ORS 47.403. The longer this law remains unchanged, the more damage it will do not only to your state brewing culture, but our economy. I'm here to urge you to pass Senate Bill 444. Many professional brewers started out by homebrewing. They joined homebrew clubs, got feedback on their brewing techniques and recipe formulations. And then when the time was right and the opportunity presented itself, they made the jump to the next level. These brewers have gone on to create small single-person breweries. Some have hired on people to help with brewing and sales. Others have added restaurants, bars, and still others have created giant brewing empires that employ hundreds of people. These brewers also support our local hop and barley farmers. Homebrewing competitions have been held in Oregon for almost 30 years. There are approximately 17 major competitions throughout the state. Some of these include the Oregon State Fair, the Oregon Brew Crew Fall Classic, Slurp and Burp, and the KLCC Microbrew Fest. Judging in these contests is a deliberative and thoughtful process that involves tasting samples as small as one to two ounces. The beers get judged based on aroma, appearance, flavor, mouthfeel, and overall impression. Entering your homebrew in a competition is one of the best ways to improve your brewing skills. The objective feedback from certified judges and sanctioned competitions can be invaluable in fine-tuning your brewing process or recipe. Homebrewing clubs also help in this process. There you can find just about anyone who will be able to give you instantaneous feedback on your beer, help you discover new brewing techniques, or teach you to use your equipment more efficiently. They also provide educational experiences in the form of guest speakers. At the Oregon Brew Crew, we've had representatives from Wise come down to talk to us about oxygen techniques and yeast culturing. Last month, we had Cascade Brewing Company come teach us about blending sour beers. We've also had a field trip out to Oregon State University where members participated in off-flavors workshop hosted by the Fermentation Science Program. From my personal experience, my brewing partner and I entered a beer in a contest the Oregon Brew Club had, and it was eventually chosen to be brewed by Widmer Brewing. This competition is called the Collaborative Project, and as part of the winning this contest, we were able to be on site during the day of the brew. We were able to get our hands dirty brewing on a system that was much larger than anything we could ever shove into our garages. And it not only gave us the feel for big production brewing, but invaluable experience that we'll be able to use to possibly start our own brewery someday. Last year, I became an organizer of Hop Madness. Hop Madness is the event held late August at Willamette Mission State Park, just up the road. It's a gathering of all the homebrewing clubs throughout the state where we camp out overnight and celebrate the hop harvest that's going on. It's the one event in the state where all the clubs have a chance to meet together and discuss homebrewing. Our activities include a hop farm tour, picking fresh hop from vines, talking to local hop farmers, and brewing with them right there on site. All this is topped off by a Best Damn Hoppy Beer Contest, where competition is based on judging a beer for not only overall hoppiness, but balanced taste, and more importantly, its drinkability. We've had people from Portland, Salem, Vin, and Medford join us, but in past years we've had people as far away from California, Arizona, Minnesota, and New York just come out for this event. Unfortunately, because of this law last year, we had our worst attendance and we were barely able to break even. The law as it's written and interpreted now has crippled homebrewing activities and created fear in the Oregon homebrew community. Many of the people are afraid of taking their homebrew out of their houses for fear of getting in trouble. In fact, I have one fellow brew crew member tell me a story that he doesn't tell people he homebrews anymore, and he's not homebrewing as much as he did. This translates into lost sales for his local homebrew store. While I realize there are many more important issues that the state needs to address this session, I urge you to give back the tools to the brewing communities and the very tools that allow homebrew stores, breweries, and other related small businesses to get back to creating the good-paying jobs the state so desperately needs. Thank you.
I think beer's right up there at the top of the list. I'm not sure. Thank you. Any questions?
Mr. Chair, I was just commenting to the good senator to my left that the slurp and burp sounds like the Senate lounge.
That would be in my district. Be careful. Thank you both.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And let's see. Dennis Kahn and Mike, I'm not sure how to pronounce your last name, of Gilganosh Brewery?
Gilganosh Brewing.
Ah, my apologies.
Last name's
Radke.
Okay.
Sure. Chairman Beyer, members of the committee, my name is Denny Kahn. I live kind of like in the mountains outside of Notai, beautiful place. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Homebrewers Alliance and my homebrew club, the Cascade Brewers Society, a club of nearly 100 members based in Eugene. I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 444 and the amendments proposed by Senator Prezansky. I've been a homebrewer for 13 years, and I've made 394 batches of beer in that time. I'm certified as a national-level beer judge by the Beer Judge Certification Program, and for the last last 6 years I've been a member of the governing committee of the American Homebrewers Association. Senate Bill 444 was written by Senator Pruzanski, a homebrewer, with input from other homebrewers. As such, it is the only bill that will restore the rights homebrewers had prior to last summer when the OLCC issued its current interpretation of the law. That interpretation now bars activities that have caused no problems in and of themselves and are essential to the culture of homebrewing. Now, everybody has been talking about the economic impact of homebrewing today, but I want to talk about the people and the culture of homebrewing a little bit. Homebrewing is about more than simply making and drinking beer, as enjoyable as that may be. Homebrewers share a camaraderie that's almost unparalleled in any other hobby. Things like homebrew competitions, festivals, and conventions let us share not only the beer we produce, but our love of and sometimes obsession with the hobby. Homebrewers can talk for hours about the nuances of a recipe or the best way to build equipment. We can talk about the history of different beer styles and the best way to recreate beers that we would never have a chance to taste otherwise. We debate seemingly endlessly about the best yeast to use for a beer or whether one type of grain is better than another. And we take pride when one of our creations wins a ribbon at a competition, just like the person who wins a ribbon at a county fair for a pie that they've made. Homebrewers spend months studying for the beer judge certification test, a 3-hour-long essay exam that explores the history, chemistry, and brewing of the 30-plus styles of beer identified in the program. And I'd just like to mention that last weekend at his Super Bowl party, the president served homebrew in the White House. So it's a pretty extensive culture. All of these things I've mentioned are where the real heart and soul of homebrewing lies. Of course, we enjoy consuming the fruits of our labors, but even more than that, we enjoy the culture of beer and homebrewers. Things like being able to pay dues to our homebrew club enable us to continue many of the activities we've long enjoyed. Changing the law to allow homebrew competitions will help us become better brewers by having our beer critically assessed and commented on by certified beer judges. Allowing homebrew tasting at events will let us share our passion for beer with others. And all of these things will ultimately benefit the people of the state of Oregon by providing the basis for homebrewers to move into the commercial arena and for the people who interact with homebrewers to become more aware of the qualities of beer, increasing the market for beers brewed and sold here in Oregon. We're not interested in selling our beer without license or in making it available to those who are not legally allowed to consume it. For all of these reasons, Senate Bill 444 is good for homebrewers and for the state. I urge you to support and pass Senate Bill 444. And thank you for the opportunity to be here today.
Thank you, Danny. Go ahead, sir.
Mike. Good afternoon, members of the board, Senator Beyer. My name is Mike Radke. I am the head brewer for Gilgamesh Brewing. We're a small brewery just south of town here. Prior to being a head brewer and owning my own brewery, I was a home brewer for 15 years. So I'm here just to say that I'm an example of the process. The home brewing is not the competitions are not just a get an award, get a pat on the back, get some feedback. It's also about networking and meeting people in the field and in the business. And now looking at as a brewer myself, instead of putting out an ad in a newspaper looking for a brewer, I want to look for somebody who has passion in the field, who shares the same emotion and charisma for brewing that I do. And the only place to really see that is at these competitions. Other than that, I'm at my brewery. I'm not going to see these people any other day. So at these competitions is a time and place for me to see these types of people who are interested in brewing. So,
thank you, Mike.
Any questions?
Thank you both. Let's see. The last person I have signed up is Thomas Irwin.
Good afternoon, members of the committee, Chair Beyer. I'm Tom Irwin. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. I'm here to say thank you to the legislature for finding a legislative solution to the homebrew dilemma. Believe me, the agency had a lot of angst all about this this last summer and wanted to have a magic solution. But on the advice of the Department of Justice and our Attorney General, there simply wasn't a way to find or alleviate the issue, even though it had been going on for a long period of time. We realize that. But we're very supportive of these efforts. Senator Prozanski and Representative Schaffler in particular obviously have had a great part to play in this, and we're supportive of the efforts to find that legislative solution and put in statute a way to allow homebrewers to allow have them do what they need to do and want to do, as long as it's not a commercial product that's being sold. And then other people have already talked about that. There's a great deal of passion about it, obviously. So I'm just here to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions, Mr. Irwin? Got off easy. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That's the last person I have signed up. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing and we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 444. We have a dash one amendment. Do you want to brief us again on that?
Richard?
Sure, I just put it away.
The amendment removes language requiring that homemade beer, wine, and fermented fruit juice be made at a private residence by a person living in the residence. The language, once that's removed, is just that it has to be for a non-commercial purpose. The amendment also adds related events to the list of events where homemade beer, wine, and fermented fruit juice are allowed. There's a long list of events where homemade beer, wine, and fermented juice, fruit juice are allowed, and the amendment just adds to that the phrase related events to the end of that list. And then finally, the amendment removes language that restricts the consumption of malt beverages on licensed premises.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the dash one amendments.
Senator Atkins has moved the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 444. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? There is none. We'll dash ones are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 444 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved Senate Bill 444 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. There is no fiscal impact. Is there any opposition? Is there any discussion on the bill? Is there any opposition to the bill? Seeing none, the bill is adopted and the work session is closed on Senate Bill 444. It's passed to the floor with as amended, and Senator Prozanski will be the carrier on this. Let's see. All right, and we're going to move on. The next bill is Senate Bill 142. Richard. Oh, excuse me. Let me open the public hearing on Senate Bill 142.
Thank you. Senate Bill 142 establishes two categories of regulation, rate regulation and service regulation for all water utilities regulated by the Public Utility Commission. It dictates that water utilities that serve 500 or more customers are rate regulated. It dictates that water utilities that serve fewer than 500 customers could be rate regulated, service regulated or not regulated based on the type, quality, and price of service they provide or based on a petition by the utility or utility customers. There's no revenue impact, and you didn't have this on the original SMS, but there's no expenditure impact. I got that just before the meeting.
Okay. Commissioner.
Chair Beyer and members of the committee, my name is Susan Ackerman. I'm a Public Utility Commissioner at the Oregon Public Utility Commission. I'm also known as the newly buyer around the commission. 142 is a bill that basically just cleans up our statute. There's no opposition to this that we're aware of, so it's a housekeeping matter, although there's one substantive change. The housekeeping cleans up some confusing and conflicting aspects of the bill. For example, small water utilities right now that are rate and service related are regulated are required to file rate schedules, but they're not actually obligated to charge those rates. Small utilities that are not rate or service regulated are not required to file their rates, and yet the statute requires them to charge according to their filed rates. So what this does is it clears up some of those inconsistencies and confusion. It reduces water regulation from three types to two types, from down to rate regulation and service regulation, and then it clarifies the regulations regarding both. The substantive change that I mentioned earlier was to increase the threshold that would actually trigger commission regulation of a small water utility from $18 to $24. We think that's probably a good fix because it actually reduces the likelihood that small water utilities will come under our regulation. And so those are the two major aspects of this bill.
Thank you. Questions of the commissioner? Thank you. Is there anybody else who wishes to just stay right there? Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on this bill? I don't have any signed up. Seeing none, we will close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 142.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 142 to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved Senate Bill 142 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Is there any objections? Seeing none, Senate Bill 142 is passed with the due pass recommendation and moved to the floor. And let's see, Senator Girard, would you like to carry this one?
If I understood it, I could do it.
You'll have some time before it gets to the floor.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay, we will open a work session on Senate Bill 143.
Public hearing.
Excuse me. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 143.
Thank you, Chair Beyer. Senate Bill 143 alters the definition of, quote, low-income customers as it relates to eligibility for the Oregon Telephone Assistance Program by removing the requirement that residents of a long-term care facility or residential care facility who receive medical assistance also not exceed 135% of federal poverty guidelines. There's no revenue impact, and we just got the fiscal, and it's a minimal expenditure impact.
Okay.
Senator Beyer.
Commissioner.
Thank you. Members of the committee. What this bill does is it just makes it easier for Medicaid recipients who are in long-term residential or residential care facilities to get this low-income assistance for telecommunications devices. Currently, the statute limits eligibility to those that have an income no higher than 135% of the federal poverty level. The problem that works for Medicaid recipients in particular is that often when they're in a long-term or residential care facility, their income is totally swept to pay the cost of the facility, and so they are technically they've got the income to get to not be eligible for the services, but obviously they do need the services because they have no income left. What this does, this bill does, is just removes the requirement that Medicaid recipients in long-term care must have incomes no higher than 135% of the federal poverty level.
Any questions, Commissioner? Seeing none, Mr. Wolf, would you like to comment on this one? You're signed up.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brant Wolf. I represent the Oregon Telecommunications Association. I think most of you know me, but just by way of background, and as a reminder, the OTA represents independent telecommunications companies that serve throughout Oregon, and for the time being, mostly rural Oregon. The association supports this bill. And simply put, the program is very well administered. It's a great program. We support what they're trying to do, and we just want to go on the record as supporting the measure. I'll answer any questions.
Thank you. Is there any questions of Mr. Wolf? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 143 and open a work session on Senate Bill 143.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 143 to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved Senate Bill 143 to the floor with a due pass.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I need to declare a potential conflict. I think I have. This is after a bankruptcy stock that might, this might help.
Okay.
I have that stock in assisted care facilities.
Thank you. Any further declarations or questions? Seeing none, is there any opposition? Seeing none, Senate Bill 143 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And Senator Edwards, it's your turn.
Sure.
You okay with that?
Yeah.
All right. Close work session on that, and we will open a work session on Senate Bill 144.
Members of the committee, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Chair. Senate Bill 144 eliminates requirements in the eligibility criteria for telecommunications devices access program that individuals be severely hard of hearing or severely speech impaired, and replaces the requirement to specify that individuals be, quote, hard of hearing or speech impaired. Allows nurse practitioners and licensed physicians to certify all disabilities qualifying a person for participation in the telephone devices access program. It allows hearing aid specialists to certify an individual as deaf or hard of hearing for the purpose of qualifying that person for participation in the telecommunications devices access program. And it allows a rehabilitation instructor for a person for persons who are blind to certify that individual as blind for the purpose of qualifying that person for participation in the telecommunications devices access program. There is no revenue impact, but we did get a fiscal in the last hour and a half, and I have that in front of you, so there is a fiscal impact, and fiscal is recommending subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay. Now, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Beyer. This bill really makes two changes, but in sum, what it does is it makes it easier for hearing, speech, or visually impaired citizens to get loans of adaptive telephone equipment. That's what TDAP does, is it loans out adaptive telephone equipment. Right now, the way the statute is written, you have to be severely hard of hearing in order to get the loan of this kind of equipment. That's unusual in most states. Almost 90% of them, they don't put a restriction on access to this equipment based on the degree of your impairment. And so this would change that to take out the requirement that a hearing impaired person be severely hearing impaired. Instead, it just relies on the certification of the professional that's examining the individual to determine eligibility for it. The second thing is it does is it allows nurse practitioners or rehabilitation counselors for the blind to certify their eligibility. Right now, those practitioners are not able to certify people under the statute, and of course that works a hardship, particularly on citizens in rural areas, because often nurse practitioners or rehabilitation counselors are the only ones that are there to serve them. And so by removing that restriction, it makes it easier for those citizens to get access to this loaned equipment.
Is there any questions of the commissioner? There's none. Thank you. Mr. Wolf, you signed up, but you don't want to testify. Ditto, you're supportive.
I guess I should just stay up here. Mr. Chair, we support this bill for the same reason we supported the previous
bill.
Your
name. Sorry.
I apologize. Brant Wolf, representing the Oregon Telecommunications Association. We support this bill. I understand now it's got a subsequent, but it's a good bill. It should pass, in our opinion.
Thank you. Any questions? There is none. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on this? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on 144 and open a work session on Senate Bill 144.
Mr. Chair, I'd move that we pass Senate Bill 144 to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Senator Atkinson has recommended passage of Senate Bill 144 with a referral to Ways and Means. Is there any further discussion?
With a due pass.
With a due pass. Any further discussion? Any opposition? Senate Bill 144 is passed to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Close on 144, and we will open on Senate Bill 147.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Senate Bill 147 removes some perimeter descriptions for piloted grounds and replaces them with descriptions based on longitude and latitude. It establishes a precautionary zone outside the Columbia River Bar for vessels intending to enter or leave the pilotage ground, requiring that vessels only enter the zone under instruction from a licensee of the Columbia River pilotage ground. Establishes a civil penalty of not more than $5,000 per offense for violation of the Columbia River precautionary zone. There's no revenue impact, and let me make sure I get that right. I'm not sure if there's no or minimal fiscal impact on this one. I apologize.
Okay.
Oh, that's because we have not received the fiscal on this, so we can't move on it.
Okay, we'll just do a public hearing today then. Commissioner, are you going to comment on this one as well?
I was not, Senator Beyer. I just wanted to indicate that the Oregon Maritime Pilot Board is under the PUC's administrative jurisdiction, but I thought that Suzanne Johnson would be here to testify, and I don't see her in the audience. So I...
Looks like we've got a whole raft of people here, so...
Then never mind.
Not to worry.
Come on up, gentlemen.
All right, so I have... are you all together? So, Mr. Tom Mark Hatt.
Yep.
Mr. Hatton. Mr. Lewin. And okay. Bob's back. He'll come up. Okay. Gentlemen, whoever wants to start.
Mr. Chair, my name is Tom Mark Graff, and I'm the Vice Chair of the Board of Maritime Pilots. Our job is to provide safe, efficient, and competent piloting services on the state's four pilotage grounds. I'm here to testify in favor of Senate Bill 147, which has the support of the board and all the stakeholders, including the Columbia River Steamship Operators, the Columbia River Bar Pilots, the Columbia River Pilots, and the Coos Bay Bar Pilots. I'm not aware of any opposition to this bill. This really addresses two concerns, and specifically the first concern is the pilotage grounds itself. The grounds are currently defined in a very antiquated way. For example, the Coos Bay ground is described as the last wharf on the in the port of Astoria to 30 fathoms of water in the ocean. It's a very inaccurate, imprecise operation. The new way of defining the grounds is to address it with longitude and latitude, so you actually know where you need to have a pilot. The second concern addresses vessels that are entering the pilotage ground in a precautionary zone. This is the area just outside of the pilotage ground. What it really requires is the vessels to communicate with the licensed pilots so that it's almost a traffic management operation, so that they know where and when these vessels need to come in. That's really all it is. It's a very simple bill, and we hope that it passes with a due recommendation.
Mr. Vaughn?
Thank you, Senator Beyer and committee members. I'm Captain Gary Lewin, the administrative pilot for the Columbia River Bar Pilots. I'm also with Captain Amos, who's my counterpart for the Columbia River Pilots. Senate Bill 147 is basically a safety measure, and it's been a product of negotiation between all the parties and cooperation between all the parties, and we strongly support it. As Tom mentioned, it removes all the ambiguities and confusions for vessels, and we deal with about 98% foreign vessels as they enter the river or depart the river. Right now, there's no real indication of where the pilot grounds start and where we have control of the vessel. So we think it's a safety measure as well as a house cleaning measure. And what it really does, in effect, is it standardizes and codifies what we actually do. I mean, we don't do anything different. This bill doesn't make us do anything different. It just allows the incoming or outgoing vessels to understand when they have to be part of the system. So we strongly support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Did you wish to testify, sir? Don't need to unless you want to. Okay. Mr. Hatton?
Hello, Commissioner Beyer. I'm sorry, Senator Beyer now,
mm-hmm.
And members of the committee. My name is David Hatton. I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Justice, and I'm General Counsel for the Board of Maritime Pilots. The Department of Justice has not taken a position on this legislation, but I am here to answer any questions about it. The bill basically takes on three issues. One is the current legislation is vague and ambiguous as to where the pilotage grounds are. This bill clarifies the pilotage grounds by defining the grounds in terms of latitude and longitude. Second, this creates a precautionary zone and places vessels in entering that zone under the direction and control of a licensee of the bar pilots. And finally, the bill provides for a civil penalty for any vessels that would violate the terms of the law. If you have any questions, I'd be pleased to answer them.
Any questions with these gentlemen?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Gerard first, and then Commissioner Burke.
Question.
Senator. I'm sorry. Still got my head in a different place.
Well, I'm not going to say where.
My apologies. Mr. Hatton threw me off.
I apologize.
All I need to know, longitudes, latitudes, I mean, I don't have a map, I haven't a clue. Is this a big expansion of your turf, or is this keeping your turf about the same as it is?
To answer that question, it really just endorses current practices.
Senator?
Mr. Chair, thank you. My question is along the same lines. I had not been aware of precautionary zones, and the ships that get the pilots are assessed for getting the pilots on board, and I'm just wondering if the precautionary zones are some kind of an expansion that requires ships to pay money to pilotage for pilotage that they don't now pay.
No, once again, we deal with as vessels arrive, let's say, at the Columbia River Bar, before they get into the influence of the river, which it becomes quite dangerous at that point in time, we try to get on board them way outside or at least get control of them so we can tell them where it's safe to go, where there's not other traffic, et cetera, et cetera. And there's no additional fiscal impact to the system at all. I mean, it's what we all do now. So there'll be no additional charges.
Okay, so right now they start paying once you board, they start paying.
Yes. Once they hire us for our service and we get on board, it's a fixed cost based on the size of the vessel primarily.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other precautionary zones besides the bar area?
In many ports such as San Francisco, the entire arrival and departure system is based on precautionary zones and certain lanes where the traffic has to come in and out of. So throughout the United States, there are many precautionary zones.
But under the Board of Maritime Pilots jurisdiction, are there any others besides
in Oregon?
No. The only two entrances would be Coos Bay, three would be Coos Bay, Newport, and the Columbia River. So no.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other? Senator Stark.
Thank you. My question is about the civil penalty that's in this bill. Is that new, or is that a replication of what's current practice?
There is a provision in currently in Oregon law that permits civil penalties from $5,000 to $50,000 for violations of any pilotage ground. This new provision relates just to the precautionary zone, and that's being created, and so it is a new provision under the law.
So, but it replicates, Mr. Chair,
mm-hmm.
but it replicates what you currently have under statute as it relates to the other pilotage areas, I guess.
Yes, it does. Although it has a much lower ceiling, the other civil penalty can go up to $50,000.
Okay.
But this has a limit of $5,000.
Thank you.
Any others? Thank you, gentlemen. Mr. Douglas.
Thank you, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. My name is Rob Douglas, here today representing the Columbia River Steamship Operators Association. We are the agents for the vessels that are being discussed here, and we do endorse this legislation. The previous testimony relating to the negotiation and the discussion that's taken place over a long period of time is accurate, and we as an industry do support this bill.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Douglas? Thank you very much. That's the last person I have signed up. Is there anybody else who wishes to comment? See none for the benefit of those who aren't familiar with our proceedings, because this, we haven't received a fiscal impact statement on this, we can't pass it out of committee today, so we'll have to schedule it for working session after that comes forward. So with that, I will close the public hearing, and do we have anything else for the good of order?
No other business.
Anything else? We're adjourned. Fantastic.